This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 279, where today AC and I talk about some of the latest cloud news, and Ranty McRantface has a rant, recorded live November 8th, 2018. A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
What's up, Ranty?
Man, if that's not a the most accurate thing you said about me today.
Hey, in fairness, I feel like having a good rant too. So I mean it in a very loving way. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, I know. It's man, I had like I feel like I've had like the worst one. I had a since we last got together and recorded, which I guess now has been 2 weeks because I did the solo show with Rob. Mm-hmm. I have had just a shitty time for the last 2 weeks.
Oh, brutal, brutal. Well, we'll have to dig into some of your suffering and pain and find out, you know, what that's all about in a little more depth as we go. But in general, like, what have you been working on?
Yeah.
Course stuff?
Yeah, I'm just like dealing with all the bull. Sorry. Fair enough. How's it like two or three bleep? A couple of bleeps in the first 10 seconds of the show. Yeah, so we shipped a new update to my course. I think it was last week or maybe the week before. Oh, last week. So it was a lot of stuff was in it. So one new chapter, it has using Angular elements with Angular 7 inside the SharePoint framework, had some new lessons to existing chapters, one on testing React components in SharePoint framework, another one on using Jest, and then another one on some additional lessons for the extensions chapter showing about tenant scope deployment. And then there was an additional like 15 lessons throughout the course that got updated, a couple little tweaks here and there, little UI stuff, but so all that was done. And then aside from that, it's just been like cleaning up stuff. So I spent the whole morning writing unit tests, but it sounds like it's hell, but to see all these things that they all of a sudden go green, or at first mm-hmm. they actually found a lot of errors that I didn't know about. Mm-hmm. So, oh my God.
Yeah, it's painful to do, but sort of vaguely satisfying that you mm-hmm. know that you've got these little helpers helping you.
Once you have the harness set up, things are much better. But it's getting the harness set up is a pain in the butt. And I like to use this tool called, I should put this in the show notes, it's called Wallaby. It's an extension. It can run on all these different IDEs and editors and stuff. They got one for Visual Studio and all the JetBrains stuff. They got one for VS Code. What's nice about it is that what it does is that when it's running, when you have the extension running, it's not free. It's a paid. There's a paid license. There's a free trial, but it's like $50 a year for one tool per person. Mm. And what it does is that once you set the configuration up, while I'm doing my dev, if I'm in a test or if I'm in the system under test, so if I'm in the actual code file, it is in the background. It's running my tests all the time, and it's putting a little indicator in the gutter on the left hand side, like where you normally have line numbers and breakpoints. It's showing me, is it passing? Is it failing? And if it's failing, it shows me the message that would show up like in the terminal window. And it also shows me that code coverage and all that stuff. So it's really cool because it allows you to have less windows open, but you're still working and it doesn't get in your way.
Yeah, I see. That's really cool.
And it's really smart. Like it detects like if you are working on a test, it doesn't rerun all the tests. It just reruns the one that you just modified and stuff like that. So I love it. Absolutely love it.
ReSharper does a bunch of that for me.
Does
not the inline stuff, but the constantly running tests mm-hmm. when you edit them and stuff like that. Yeah, it's nice.
Cool.
I'll have to check it out though for that inline stuff because you got to have your test runner window open or whatever and see the results.
Yeah. How about you, man? What you been up to?
Oh, cooking up a whole bunch of new plans around product that we're kicking off, and so just doing a bunch of research on that and. We're fiddling around with some new stuff around Cosmos DB and things like that. So like graph, using the graph model type stuff in Cosmos DB. So still super early days, but a couple of our guys are looking into that. And so we're just sort of working out a few new plans for some new features that we got cooking, which has been, which is always fun. You know, it's always cool to play around with new things and and decide on, you know, what set of tools are going to best meet the requirements and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's cool.
How much of the stuff that you guys are working on is like customer-driven stuff, or is ideas that you guys have that you think is going to be a value to the product?
We go through waves, but at the moment, it's all customer-driven. I would say maybe 80% of the stuff that we go build is customer-driven. 20% will come from an idea from a customer, but may not be like directly like a, oh, this is what I want kind of thing. It's more of like, you know, they've hinted to something or alluded to something, and you sort of draw from that into something bigger.
Right.
But we can't really afford to do that, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, stuff where we've just cooked something completely out of scratch with no customer involvement.
Wait, and I guess I wasn't asking like, you know, did you just not doing the, I shouldn't say classic dev, but if you're doing like a
build it and they will come kind of thing.
Yeah. I have a great idea. This is going to run. I mean, it's, you know, it's stuff that you've, you know, validated with the market and stuff like that you would build. But
yeah,
you know, I didn't know if it was a, you know, we've had a couple of customers ask about this and they're not asking for a car. They keep asking for a faster horse. So what if we built, you know, this, that was,
yeah,
so that,
yeah.
I was kind of thinking about something like that. So
yeah, we're working on something like that right now where a customer, actually a couple of customers are asking for one very specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some plans and some designs around a feature that we think would do it better. We're working with them and going through prototyping and design phase, and we're showing them as we go through all of that and talking with them about it. And we think it's going to end up quite a lot better than what they're originally asking for, and but obviously would still meet their needs. But yeah, it's, you often will get people asking for stuff that that's not necessarily what we would build to meet that requirement, right? Because they've got a preconceived notion of what the solution looks like.
Yeah.
Which is not always the best way to implement it, or wouldn't meet more customers' needs. It would be very specific to them, or, you know, and that's the thing. Like if you work with a customer on a feature, you'll build the feature for them, right? And that's really dangerous to be in. Anyway, but yeah, outside of that, we're getting really close to moving house. That's sucking up a bunch of brain cycles and pain and suffering. Man, it's so hard to sell and buy houses.
Yeah. You've got an offer down on another house that you're moving into?
Yep. Yeah.
And have you got an offer on yours yet?
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
It's all like the stars are slowly aligning.
Yeah.
But it seems like at each turn there's another little hurdle that we've got to cross.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you're selling a house and buying a house at the same time, all the things have just got to line up just right.
Mm-hmm.
And then the brain will spring on you. Oh no, we've got this requirement that we failed to tell you about 3 weeks ago, and now you have to satisfy that and go get this paperwork and blah blah blah. And it's like, oh my god,
it's amazing to me how that process, like how that house of cards, it always feels like a house of cards. Like I can't afford to buy the house that I want to move into until I sell my house. But there are,
I'm not going to sell my house until I find a house I like to move into.
Right. And that's not that right there. That's not the whole story, because there's somebody else that is doing that exact same thing with my house. And there's somebody doing that with their house and going farther and farther.
Chain of shit.
You pull one card out from the bottom of that down, and all of a sudden you've got this ripple that goes across, and it's a pucker. But we did that when the house we're in right now, we had to move into the house we're in now. We had to find a house. This is back like 10 years ago when the housing market just went belly up.
Yep.
So my wife was pregnant. Baby was coming in June. We put the house on the market that we were in February. We were for two people working from home with two kids, the house we were in was not going to work.
Mm.
It was a 3-bedroom, very small third bedroom. I was like, this isn't going to work. So we're trying to find another house and also a place where we could work from home. And there was nothing that was available. Everything was on, you know, short sales. So banks weren't talking to you for like 9 months for a response. And we're scrambling. And all of a sudden, our house sold and by the end of February. And we're still sitting there in April and we're trying to find a house. And we're like, we have to move next month to be able to, you know, there's no way we can do this with a newborn or with my wife. Like, she's already seriously pregnant, or I guess she's always seriously pregnant, but like 9 months.
You can't be half pregnant.
Yeah,
it's really stressful. And it blows my mind how archaic the industry is.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much physical paperwork. Like, I mean, I hadn't bought and sold a house in over 10 years and nothing's changed.
Mm-mm.
It's the same.
It doesn't make sense to me. Even when you do like a refi, it's the same. It's the same deal. We've done a refinance on our house, and we switched from, well, we did that a couple of years ago to take advantage of rates. And same deal. You've got an inch of paperwork that you've got to get through, and someone comes to the house, and it's like you're just signing away. Like,
yeah.
Does anybody even stop to read all this stuff?
Yeah, we shouldn't really get started on banking in the US. It just blows my mind how archaic it is. But it sort of weirds me out that when you refinance, you're effectively selling the house to yourself again. It's so mm-hmm. strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, this is a terrible, terrible topic to get into.
Well, let me go off on a rant.
Okay, let's get into something techie.
Inbox Zero is a thing of the past. We're all so inundated with email, and that's where Sanebox comes in. Think of it as an EMT for your email. As messages flow in, Sanebox does the triage for you. SaneLater sifts all distracting stuff out of your inbox so you can focus on only the important emails. That's just a taste. It also has nifty features like Sane Black Hole and Sane Reminders. Best of all, you can use Sanebox with any email client or phone, anywhere you check your email. See how Sanebox can magically remove distractions from your inbox with a free 2-week trial. Visit sanebox.com/MSCloudShow. Start your free trial and get a $25 credit.
Okay, for multiple reasons, I've had a very bad 2 weeks, from like a death in the family to earlier this week threw my back out. But in the last few days, I've really tried. I'm not against it, but I've really tried to use Microsoft Teams. And it's because there's a group that I'm in that we're all in Slack, but it would be easier if we were all in Teams for various reasons. And it just trust me that it does make sense. It makes a lot more sense for us to be in Teams than in Slack for this specific group.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, I got no problem with it. I'm not against Teams. I prefer Slack, but I'm not against it, whatever. And I would like to be in a real group because I work in a company of one person, so I can't really use it effectively. And I'm a team of one. I mean, it doesn't really help. So I got in this limbo space where I couldn't get an invite to work. And I think the thing that was the most disappointing for it, there's a couple of features with the app that are really frustrating. Like, you know how the notifications that you get, you use Teams? Let me ask you that.
On and off. Yeah.
Okay. So you know the notifications it uses?
Yeah.
So did you know that those don't use the native notification system either in Mac OS or in Windows? So that if you go to mute notifications, Teams doesn't respect it. And on Mac, the notification only shows up on the screen where the Teams client is active. So if you have virtual desktops and you're on a different desktop, you don't see the notification. Like, I have a comms desktop that I set up for like Outlook and texting and iMessage and Teams and Slack, and alerts show up everywhere else except for that one.
I did wonder that actually, because I was doing a presentation, like a webinar thing, and had Do Not Disturb set. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure I saw no Teams notifications, I think. Something like that, anyway.
What's sad about it?
A vague recollection of that.
What's really sad about that is that it's been something that's been asked in user voice back in 2016, and there have been a couple of updates by the team, including one as recently as a month ago, where they simply said, we're still working on it. Like, is it really that freaking hard to do this? Now, let me get to the other side. Let me tell you what happened to me. And yeah.
Your invite story, right?
Yeah. Let me tell you what happened to me. And the way it was handled is what is just infuriating. So I was being invited as a guest into a team.
Well, there's your problem.
Yeah. Well, here you go. Well, that's a tech problem. Okay. So
I see where this is going.
Yeah. So I was invited as a guest into a team in the Microsoft org. Now, I was already a member of one team in the Microsoft org. But all of a sudden, one day, I noticed that my Microsoft org disappeared from Teams. And it's because somebody made a mistake over at Microsoft that was going through the Azure AD guest accounts and the Microsoft org and did a mass delete of people with an inactive date of a certain date. But they screwed up, and the inactive date was like within just the last hour. So unless you were active in the last hour, they deleted your account.
Oh, dear.
Now, so all these people started flipping out. And like going, hey, I disappeared. Well, the resolution, once they figure out what was going on, the resolution was easy because you go into a recycle bin. If you just restore from the recycle bin, all your membership stays the same. Don't recreate the account. You're good to go. The problem is that if you're in the recycle bin and someone sent you an invite and you tried to accept that invite while you're in the recycle bin, you got put into this little limbo spot and they could no longer restore you. nor could you accept any invites. And so when you clicked on any of the invites, it would always tell you the error you would get after logging in was invitation redemption failed. See your system administrator with no other guidance. So that happened. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, I reached out to a couple people. I'm like, where do you go to get help? Where do you go to get help? And everybody's response that I asked was, you need to go talk to Laurie. And I'm like, are you f-ing kidding me? Right? It's a big organization with a product that's trying to scale to millions of people. And if you have an authentication problem, you need to go speak to Laurie. I'm like, Laurie, I have nothing against Laurie, but yeah. I don't care who it is. The fact that it's a single individual, she doesn't scale at that level. There's no way. Yeah. So I find Laurie on Yammer. I send her a private message. I put a public message in a forum in the tech community. I put it on answers.microsoft.com. I got a response from answers.microsoft.com telling me not to post there because you used the wrong account. You should use your MVP profile. Like, how about you answer the question?
Yeah.
So I go back and post again. I post a link to my question inside of Yammer in an MVP group. And I wasn't getting any response. That was on Thursday. I got no response on Thursday, no response on Friday. And then until a certain time on Friday, when I got another invite and invite notification and email that was somebody is trying to, and I won't say the person's name, is trying to invite you into a Microsoft team. I'm like, try to get that one. Still same problem.
That's my problem.
Yeah. Then I got another email saying, this person is trying to reach you on Teams. This person's trying to reach you on Teams. So they're at mentioning me in Teams. Here's what they did. I found this out later because ultimately they finally fixed my account 5 seconds later. And I magically clicked on one of the invites again and I got in. And when I got in, I started to see what was behind the curtain. Somebody had taken my public post in a forum. They had copied it, including the link to the post. They had pasted it inside of a Microsoft Teams team. And they started discussing my problem. And then people on that thread were trying to connect with me and trying to help me. And they start getting frustrated when I don't answer the calls that they're trying to call me on, or I'm not showing up for the meetings that they set up to try and troubleshoot my problem. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me?
Can anybody read?
Like, I can't get into any team in Microsoft Teams, specifically the Microsoft org, and you've taken a public support forum and you've tried to pull me into a totally different, like in a place that I can't even get to. Like,
yeah.
Stupid is it? And then it gets better. It gets better. After I got in, I got a message back to them saying, hey, that's great. Glad you got sorted. Yes, we should have gone through and contacted you on the public forum, da, da, da.
Or how about something that works, like email?
I gave them my email and a thing. I was like, here's all the stuff you got for me. This is the first time I'd used Yammer in like 4 months. And what do they do? After I get in, they're like, hey, and they said, you need to update your display name. I'm like, I do, because I'm looking at it and it shows Andrew Connell _ guest. But on their side, I'm showing up as me, the two character word
at the beginning of your email.
Right. Because when I accepted my invite, my invite automatically pulled the alias part of my email and used that as my display name for my email.
Gotcha.
And they're telling me to go to change my display name. And I'm like, well, how do you do that? I can't find anywhere in the app to do that. No, everyone helps. You can't. But you know what they sent me? They sent me a link on how to do it.
Ooh,
it's a PowerShell. You get a PowerShell script. You have to have global tenant admin access to connect to the directory and you can change the display name property. I write back and I'm like, you realize you're asking me and to connect to a guest to connect to the Microsoft Microsoft Azure Active Directory instance as a global tenant admin. I'm confident I don't have permissions, nor should I have permissions to have that kind of access. Yeah.
Teams doesn't let you update. As a guest, you can't update your stuff, which is, we actually get that request quite a bit at Hyperfish to say, like, can you go do your Hyperfish stuff with our guests? Because they've got no way to update their things.
Yeah, I'm just like, and of course, once it was resolved, none of them followed up in any of the posts that I put out there. So all these other people who had the same problem, they haven't been able to, they didn't know what was going on. So I went there and I posted my stuff. And I mean, I reached out to the people like powers that be in Teams on Twitter and tried anything. I was like, this is the first experience that I'm having with Teams. God forbid anybody else is trying to do, like somebody who's not technical and doesn't know who to call. They don't know how to get in touch with Laurie.
Yeah. Poor Laurie. Bitch, she's having a terrible time.
I tried. I'm trying and it's like,
There's two annoying things about this, right? One, that the thing didn't work, right? That it was broken and that you couldn't fix it, and you were at the mercy of having some manual intervention to get it sorted. The second super annoying thing is that people don't read and they don't listen.
Or think.
Well, you've got to listen and like suck it all in first before you can think about how to solve it, right? And it's like, it irritates me when they take the least path of friction, the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
And just skip over the hard parts, don't bother reading it, or are just too lazy, and like hot potato it to somebody else. You know?
Well, and the part is that, and then for this one specifically, I just got pissed because it was somebody went through the effort to basically lift my support question out of a public forum and put it in a private forum and have the question there. I mean, that takes effort. That's a pain in the butt to do.
Yeah, fair.
Well,
yes, guest access, I think, is what it boils down to, and that it's still a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a similar story, except with Todd Clint, strangely enough.
Uh-oh.
And external user access into SharePoint. So our partner portal is foolishly in SharePoint Online. And you laugh, but like I remember a couple of years ago when we were setting this thing up saying, this is a terrible idea. I'll tell you why this is a terrible idea. Because it requires guest access to work.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know how that is a minefield in SharePoint, right?
Yep.
And so sure enough, every once in a while, I get called in to go, we're trying to invite this person and they can't get in. And all they're getting is like a correlation ID and no detail. And so then I got to go in and try and diagnose why they can't get in. And usually it results in having to wipe that person from like multiple places. You got to go into SharePoint, into the SharePoint site, and you got to remove them from that SharePoint site, permissions and stuff like that, right? Then you got to go into this magical freaking hidden user list in SharePoint, which it's the background of it is there's this magical user hidden user list that's like from the WSS 2 days, right?
Yeah.
Like when the portal server wasn't even involved and like users' data details would get copied into this list so that things could reference it from other lists and stuff like that, right? Anyway, you got to go in and nuke them out of that list, and then you got to go into Azure AD and get them out of that list too, right? And so even as the SharePoint site admin, you can't go do that stuff, right? You've got to go talk to Laurie, right?
Can Laurie help with this too?
So I'm the Laurie at Hyperfish. And so, yeah, I've got to go wipe them from Azure AD, wipe them from this magical hidden user list, wipe them from the permissions in the site, all of that sort of stuff. And then you might be able to re-invite them. And then you've really got to hope that they're not already signed in to a 365 tenant when they hit the invite link, if that's not the one they want to sign up with, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because otherwise you're already signed in and it's a pain in the ass and you end up with the same problem again. Anyway, so Todd, if you're listening, I hope you were able to accept the invite after all of that. But anywho, hey, let's get into some news. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC. Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring unlike anything you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality. Try Raygun free at raygun.com today. All right, AC. Speaking of account pain in Teams and Office 365, I do have a glimmer of hope. And it's coming from the Azure Active Directory team. So yesterday I noticed in the Azure portal, when I clicked on my little photo in the top right-hand side of the portal, it popped out this new menu. Mm-hmm. And this new menu, I was like, wow, that's a little different. What's it letting me do? Holy smokes, it's letting me switch Azure AD accounts. Not switch directories, right? Switch directories has been there for quite a while. Like, so if you're signed in with your Microsoft account, say your atlive.com account in my case, you've always been able to switch directories that that account has access to. That's fine. But what this does is let you switch Azure Active Directory accounts or MSA accounts, right? So I could go from being signed in as my atlive.com account to my @hyperfish.com account or my @whatever dummy test Azure Active Directory account. And it works.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty sweet. It only works in the Azure portal though. So when you switch accounts, if you're signed into Office 365 and you go to your Office 365 tab and refresh, you're still signed in as that old account.
Yeah.
So this experience has to wash through all of the different sites, I guess, that use Azure AD accounts. But like,
big.
This is progress.
Yeah, yeah. This is
big. This for a while, I think, right?
I've been frustrated with it. I've had it, not so much, I've had this feature for a while, yeah. I've noticed it in my Azure portal. I don't understand how I got it. I know that it was in preview for a little bit. And I don't know how my accounts came to that, because remember I got the new UI for Azure DevOps for VSTS. I got that like months before you got it. And I don't remember opting into anything. So the whole guest identity thing and the whole like switching accounts and stuff, it's progress. That's definitely progress. So,
yeah. So we got a reply. Alex Simons, who's the CVP of identity at Microsoft, I replied to my tweet with this and said, could be, but still an unconfirmed sighting. Blog coming soon. So
that's out, and now it's out today. The blog post is out today.
Oh, is it? Is it?
Yeah.
So I just noticed that the feature had lit up before the blog post came out. Gotcha.
Yeah,
it was pretty funny because he was like, somebody replied to my tweet and said, please say it so. And I was like, yep, it's live for me. And Alex Simons came back and was like, # fake news.
Yeah.
Nope. You are fake news.
Yeah. There was a blog post in the last few days. It's the November 2018 update for the Azure portal. And it's the top news item in the portal. I didn't see it until this morning when we sat down to do the news. So I'll make sure we have a link to it in the show notes.
Oh, awesome.
Where that'll be in there. But that's definitely in there. I found another bit of news that I thought was pretty interesting, especially for on the Azure side. And it's a bit of a delayed, thing based on the quarterly reports that have come out, because some of the stuff is old news, but some of it is new. So this article by Forbes talks about how Microsoft in the last 12 months, their cloud revenue has exceeded by a pretty substantial margin, the revenue of AWS. Mm. So get this. Microsoft's booming 8.5, I'm going to quote just the first paragraph of this article. Microsoft's booming $8.5 billion in cloud revenue last quarter helped it open a decisive lead over Amazon as the world's leading enterprise cloud provider for the last 12 months. Microsoft, so now I'm not quoting, I'm just paraphrasing. Microsoft, their 12-month revenue number was $26.7 billion. AWS, or Amazon, which is AWS, was $23.4 billion. So Microsoft beat them out by 3.3 billion. So what is that? 3.3 divided by 26.7. They beat them by 12%, right? That's a pretty substantial bump, especially when you look at how much business AWS does in the cloud and how everybody sees them as being like the leader. Microsoft is now the leader. I thought it would take longer for them to get to this day, but.
Yeah, but the Microsoft, so, okay, playing devil's advocate for a second. The Microsoft number includes Office 365, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's still cloud revenue. So.
Well, yeah, I totally get that. It is cloud revenue. It's not exactly apples to apples though, right? Because AWS is more AWS and the Microsoft number's not just Azure. But I get it's all cloud.
Yeah. Microsoft's number is Azure, which is kind of like, you kind of see that as more the feature comparison to AWS. It also includes productivity stuff, which Microsoft has a substantially better offering, while AWS does have like hosted Exchange and mail and an Active Directory story.
Well, that's true. Yeah,
it is kind of the same. But I mean, there's nothing like a SharePoint or a Planner or a Teams or OneDrive. There's nothing like that in the AWS stack. But then there's things in the AWS stack, I'm sure, that are, there's no equivalent to it over in the Azure stack, but it's, or the Azure stack, not like the product Azure stack.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha. Yeah, fair enough. Well, that's, I mean, it's incredible. Like, Microsoft is crushing it in the cloud. And then there's lots of people that are still poo-pooing them, but it's like, you know, undeniable that they're making a lot of progress.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wild, huh? Hey, I got one more news item. We're going to try and wrap up pretty soon because we chatted on rantiness for a while. A couple of things I wanted to point out. I think you guys mentioned it last week, but I just want to mention it again. The post-incident analysis from GitHub was a really fascinating and interesting read. It really blew my mind that, in a nutshell, they were down for more than 24 hours because of a 43-second network outage. If there is ever a case of cascading failures, this is a really good example, right?
Yeah.
And it's a, like, I feel for them. Like, it was a really terrible situation, but it's a great read about how it happened and what ultimately led to the 24 hours of death and destruction. Mm-hmm. And, man, they must have worked hard to get this back. But anyway, I won't go into super, super lots of detail on it.
You know, the thing that I think is probably the most challenging or the scariest part of that, not scary. If I was on their side, what seems to be the most frustrating part of it was the...
That looked painful.
Oh my God, that was incredibly painful. So I'm on the recovery from, oh God, here we go again. I sneezed, I've got my back's out. Oh God.
I'm so sorry. I'm laughing.
Oh man, we're going to have to leave that one in the show.
Dude, I feel for you, man. That just looks so sore.
It hurts like hell.
Oh, bro. Oh,
man. So... Ah, yeah. So there's the behind the scenes on back pain.
Yeah.
There you go. I've got my heating pad over here.
Oh my God. Talk it up, Grandma Connell.
my portable TENS unit too.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway. Oh, geez. So.
You were feeling for them.
I was feeling for them because it looked like one of the most painful parts that they had to deal with was the restoration of terabytes of data from the cloud and restoring databases. So it was a lot of waiting. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't speed it up. And
they were just trying to transfer terabytes of data from a cloud provider from their storage. And I'm guessing it was AWS. Yeah. Bandwidth.
So painful. Anyway.
Yes. Any last requests before we move on?
No more sneezing.
No more sneezing. Okay.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users and organizational directories, such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
All right, AC, let's wrap this up with some picks.
I got one that I was pretty... I thought this was awesome.
Oh, yeah. You shared this with me earlier in the week, and it's cool.
If I had the money... Man, if I had just the play money to do this, I'd do it in a heartbeat. Mm. This company called Icon, I-C-O-N, they took a 1949 Mercury EV derelict... Or sorry, a Mercury Stealth.
Yep.
Stealth. And they... Basically, they gutted it, and they put in a Tesla... 85 kilowatt battery. I think it was 85. Yeah. Tesla, a performance 85 kilowatt battery array that fits perfectly in the floorboard of the car as the base part of the chassis. And they went in and built a custom aluminum like engine like thing. It looks like an engine. It's under the hood, but it's really just, if you cracked it open, it's just the housing for all the computers and stuff to manage the battery and the powertrain and everything. It looks so freaking badass, man. I would love to take this car. This looks like a project that would just be so incredibly fun to do. But, oh man.
That must have taken a lot of work. That's incredible. I love projects like this. It just looks so cool because it's just like this rusty old car on the outside. Mm-hmm. But I bet it would burn everybody off from the lights, no problem at all.
I'd love to take this thing, take the body, get it sandblasted, and paint it like a really rich black or like a big or a real yellow, a banana yellow. And this thing looks absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, and it's got an iPad for the dash as well, which I thought was pretty funny. Well, sort of a screen the size of an iPad anyway.
Yeah, but the screen is all like the old school stuff.
Yeah, it's really nice. What a cool project. I love it.
Yeah, too cool. How about you? What you got?
Speaking of retro and space, Vans, the shoe company, you know, the skater shoes? Mm. They've got this collaboration with NASA, and they're doing a series of different shoes, actually. There's a bunch of different ones with that are space themed, I guess, or like astronaut and NASA themed. So there's the Vans X Space Voyager Old School, which are a pair that I got, these blazing orange, you know, sort of low cut Van style shoes. They've got like Velcro American flags on the back, like the NASA, like the astronaut patches they have on their spacesuits. Mm-hmm. It's got the NASA worm logo down the side. Few things like that. And the sole looks kind of like the bottom of an astronaut's moon boot. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, there's sort of that pattern. So they've got those. They've got the like the high top, you know, like the higher ankle type boot feel ones as well with the NASA logo, the new NASA logo. It's newish old in now, but on the side and all that sort of stuff in white and things. And they got a pair in black as well, which is really cool. And then they got some jackets and bags and stuff. But anyway, it's pretty retro. It's pretty cool, space related. And I'm recording this podcast in a pair of orange NASA Vans.
Yeah, it looks, my son was really, I showed him that picture I saw on Facebook this morning that you posted. And I was like, oh man, he really wants a pair of the orange ones. But
you know, they're very reasonably priced. They're not insane, but they're really hard to get. Mm-hmm. All the men's shoes, oversized 7.5. So he might be right, but oversized 7, actually probably not anymore. Oversized 7.5 or 8 in men is all sold out. Yeah. They're really popular, super hard to get. So they may restock them.
I like the Anorak, man. If that thing is like completely waterproof and stuff, I need a new rain jacket. I was like, that'd be perfect.
Wouldn't it? It looks really cool.
Yeah.
Super cool. Anyway, sort of nerdgasm when I got them last night. They arrived in the mail. It's like, oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah, you said nerdgasm in the Facebook post and I showed it to my son. I like pulled your profile up at the very bottom of the phone, my phone. I gave my phone, I go, now scroll up. And so he starts scrolling up and he sees, he's like, oh, he got the shoes. He's like, what's a nerdgasm?
It's like when a nerd gets really excited.
Yeah, I'm like,
It's like what dad does when he gets a new Lego set. That's what.
Oh, no laughing, please.
Yeah, oh, fair enough. All right, AC. Well, good luck with your back. Sorry to hear it's painful to sneeze. That was pretty funny, though. Sorry about laughing, but I couldn't help it. And thanks for another great show.
Yeah, man. We got a bunch of additional notes that we'll put in the show from other big news that came in. We just ranted a bit too much.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. We do go off on tangents sometimes. Anywho. All right, dude. Catch you next week.
All right, man.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.